This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, if you missed it, the NFL's Flex Sunday's Cowboys game versus the Eagles. It was going to be the 3:25 kick, now moves to a noon kick. So you'll have 9 a.m. pregame here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan, and the Packers and the Vikings are going to get the game of the week love there for Fox, and that'll be the 3:25 game. It's the G-Bag Nation here on a Cowboy victory Monday. Super Bowl champion Brian Broaddus, I'm Eric Chiafalo, and we got Lucius Alexander, Carter Freeman, coordinate the video, fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Great to have you in. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
The text was telling me, by the way, Broaddus, I think it's like every like 15 to 20 years.
Okay.
There's a Hanukkah Christmas mesh point.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
There we go, educational.
Yeah, Bennett's soon to be 21 years old. So, man, it seems like that maybe when he was like a baby, when he was 5 years old last time we did this. I mean, I don't know.
It's been a while.
It's funny because, my family, they celebrate both. So it's like, that's because, my ex-wife and I were, it's like, okay, we'll allow them to do that. So we have the Hanukkah and the Christmas at the same time.
He's the real winner and so all he that. He probably just cleans up, dude.
He does clean up. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he cleans up for sure.
I bet, dude. And I bet he was tearing it up at the game, Texas-Clemson.
He was.
Was he firing them cannons?
He was firing them cannons. Hey, how about interviewing Gene, though?
Gene Dekeroff yesterday.
Is he a trip?
The voice of the Buccaneers. I think he was ready to go just full P.J. Carlissimo. It was like, give him the rock and just get out of the way, dude. He's ready to just set a volume carry record.
He has every stat known to man in that head of his.
Every time he says something, it reminds him of something else. Yeah. That reminds him of something else. Yeah. And next thing you know, you've got the full scouting report in your one question.
I love the fact that it's always we.
Yeah.
We did this. We did. And I, you know what? Hey, you know what? You're the announcer for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Go ahead and be we.
Yeah. Just go lean into it. Yeah. That was a fun conversation.
He used to be at Florida State. He's like a legend at Florida State with some of the teams that he's called their games. Mm-hmm. Like, man, he is big time announcer.
877-881-1053. What was your biggest takeaway from the NFL weekend? It started on Saturday, and unfortunately, the Texans deal with a catastrophic injury to Tank Dell. And D'Amico Ryans told reporters today that it's a dislocated knee and it's a torn ACL and suffered other damage, whatever that means.
Hopefully not nerve.
Right, obviously. Yeah, that's certainly the big one there. The Jalen Smith drop foot kind of stuff. Yeah. That's like the one that you can almost never really be cured from and getting back to even close to what you were beforehand. So certainly prayers up for Tank Dell. The whole game stopped down. It's one of, you hate to see it. Totally hate to see it. Then you just snap right back into play and you're like, how do you do that when you see a teammate and what a hell of a catch. I mean, unbelievable touchdown grab. And then, of course, the Chiefs go on to win that game. Pat Mahomes, is he actually hurt? I don't know. But I mean, I'm blinking my eyes, and at the start of the game, he's running like 20 yards for a touchdown. I'm like, okay, so much for the ankle issues. Like, I mean, that is – and the DeAndre Hopkins signing for them was huge. He just comes up with big plays for them, clutch third down kind of moments. So the Chiefs continue to roll there on Saturday, and now they gear up for a Wednesday Christmas Day game. And, man, if the Bills would have lost to the Patriots yesterday, which was a nail-biter – That would have pretty much took all the wind out of the sails for the Christmas Day game coming up for the Chiefs on Wednesday, because had the Bills lost, the Chiefs would have had pretty much everything wrapped up for
wrapped
the one seed.
Yep.
But the Bills go ahead and escape the Patriots, and now we're still neck and neck here. And that's what's fun with the way they have the seedings now, because it usually goes down to the final week. Like the NFC right now. Yeah, everybody should be pulling for the Vikings to beat the Packers on Sunday, just so simply we can get the Week 18 final game of the season for all the marbles for the NFC North, Lions versus Vikings.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Yeah. But yesterday's Football Sunday was pretty great all the way around. Of course, the Cowboys get the dub on Sunday Night Football, and I can't even express how fun the game was and the physicality of it, just jumping off the screen. Everybody was getting hit. Vita Vea, I mean, Vita Vea in coverage and then just smashing Jake Ferguson.
Yeah.
Or I'm pretty sure Turpin got stuck in his navel on that one play there down in the red zone, just running right into a grizzly bear.
Right into him, yeah.
And Brad Sham has a nice little call of that. We'll get to 6 o'clock hour, two guys, one booth. But, I mean, I think, obviously, the Jaden Daniels is probably, I mean, that performance right there for the Commanders. And I know Kenny Pickett was playing quarterback for most of the game. If Jalen Hurts doesn't get hurt, the Eagles end up winning that game, I presume. But the Eagles had so many chances. Saquon Barkley dropping a huge pass there late in the game.
We've seen that before, right?
And then Devontae Smith, man. I mean, I can't imagine what Eagles fans, I mean, we heard a little bit on that shred line earlier, G-Bag of the Day. That was the funniest part, as the Commanders beat the Eagles and eliminate the Cowboys from playoff contention. The one silver lining was that the Eagles lost, and the Pets' heads are going to be falling off in a situation like that.
Yeah, but would you be a little worried if you're an Eagles fan? And I mean this in a way, yeah, you mentioned all the guys that they you know, especially the quarterback that didn't play, but would you be worried about how the Commanders were able to move the ball in that fourth quarter, get to 22 points?
Yes,
would
absolutely.
Would that be something that it kind of looked like the Eagles of old, but they've done such a great job of remaking that secondary. And I don't know. This is probably just a blip, right? It's probably just a blip, and they're going to be okay, kind of a thing. Are you
the Eagles defense?
Yeah.
You can never be too sure. I mean, defense can be volatile. You can be a really awesome defense, and then all of a sudden, teams figure out ways to take advantage of you. Now, the Eagles did force a ton of turnovers yesterday, but that fourth quarter, you give up 22 points.
Right, that's what.
And Jaden Daniels went Superman mode. And when you got a guy who can just take off and run on you on fourth down and go get like 29 yards on a fourth and 11, it's like those are backbreakers, dude. And obviously not every quarterback can do what he was able to do there.
Yeah.
But yes, if you're an Eagles fan, you now have your quarterback shaken up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really been, I know Saquon Barkley gets all the headlines, and I get it, the highlight reel stuff. He's been awesome for them. But their offense, the advanced metrics indicate their offense isn't much better than it was last year. The big difference for the Eagles this year is that their defense has been
lights out better.
And they
were
terrible last year.
Right.
And that's reflected in, okay, you move on from defensive coordinator, you bring in Dick Fangio. Their entire draft was basically, we got to get younger and more athletic defensively. And they had a home run draft. And now that's really the main reason why the Eagles have been so good this year. So if all of a sudden things are going to bottom out defensively, then yes, that's going to be the demise, because the Eagles offense, it's good, but Jalen Hurts is not going to put the team on his back and carry an average defense. Their defense has to be lights out.
Yeah. I tell you, I just think they're so much better at the cornerback spot, you know, with Quinnen Mitchell and what they've been able to, you know, with him being as part of it. I think he has really been a home run when it comes to, you know, having to play in that secondary. I mean, he's not going to give much up. You know, for a rookie, he's so comfortable playing out there. And sometimes these rookies struggle, But man, he has done a fabulous job for the Eagles.
Yes, no, he absolutely has. I'm trying to figure out what was the coolest part of the day, because there were a couple of plays yesterday that stand out amongst the rest. You have Joe Burrow going horizontal. Mm. He's like Supermaning basically, and he's right before centimeters before his knee hits the ground.
Yeah.
He throws it, touchdown, T. Higgins. Joe Burrow continues to have an MVP type season, and the Bengals are still alive. And then the other one was from the Detroit Lions, and this Ben Johnson just continues the fake fall down. Now, did you get the backstory on that? Did you see where that came from?
I'll tell you this: the first time I'd ever saw, but it was like, I saw it as a tight end delay, and I think that's what you saw. It was a little bit of a...
Yeah, because it ends up in a LaPorta touchdown pass.
The first time I ever saw it was Bruce Coslett with the Cincinnati Bengals did it. The first time I ever saw it was they had a tight end, Tony McGee, that fell down. Like, he would act like he blocked, and he would fall to the ground.
Oh, okay.
And so you would see the play, like he would... They would fake the play action, like he's blocking, and he would be on the ground, and as everybody's running, he'd get up and then run to the opposite side, and they'd throw him the ball.
Sneak attack style.
Yeah, that's the...
I like that. That's a good design.
Yeah, but he would act like block, and he'd fall on the ground, and they would lose him, and then he'd get up and run. And when those guys came to Dallas, that's the first time I'd ever seen it, and it worked like two or three times. Yeah, it's just crazy. It's like, oh, you're ready. We're about to run the tight end fall.
It keeps working.
It just keeps working because they lose track of the guy.
This one was amazing yesterday. Ben Johnson and the Detroit Lions, they draw up an intentional fake fumble kind of play where they're lined up, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs I formation in the backfield. They go play action with it, and Jahmyr Gibbs intentionally trips, and then Goff acts like he's kind of fumbling the handoff.
Right.
And then he pops up and finds a wide open tight end, LaPorta, across the field for a touchdown. And at first you see it and you're like, whoa, was that intentional? Turns out it definitely was intentional. Yeah. And apparently where Ben Johnson got it from was from last year, September of 2023. It was the Packers also playing the Bears, and the Packers had it just accidentally. It's a play action play to the tight end, but they actually stumble and the running back falls down and Jordan Love's kind of wonky doing the play action, and it ends up working for them to where Jordan Love throws a huge play to the tight end for a touchdown. And so, or almost a touchdown. It gets inside the 5-yard line. But Ben Johnson of the Lions sees that play and he's like, dude, that worked. And it worked versus the Bears last year. And so he actually just drew it up that way to have a fake stumble, fumble, play action, boom, tight end open. This dude continues to impress.
Well, that's just the whole premise of stealing ideas. You watch tape, you could see.
But this is like a new evolution of it. This is
But you're seeing something and you're thinking like, wow, okay, how do we make this even better?
Yeah.
The great ones can do that. They have that ability.
And I know it's just for a multitude of reasons. The Cowboys, like Ben Johnson to the Cowboys, just doesn't seem like it's plausible in any way.
Not because they're bringing back Mike McCarthy.
They're going to bring back McCarthy, yes. And even if they don't, like, Ben Johnson has super high standards with the way that he wants things to go. He's going to want to do it his way. He also is a first-time head coach. Jerry Jones doesn't really want to go for that. And he also wants to command top-of-the-market money. And Jerry Jones doesn't want to pay big money to a coach. So for all those reasons, Ben Johnson really isn't a realistic option for the Cowboys, even though that's the one that, if you are an actual Cowboys fan and you want the best, that would be your dream scenario. But the Joneses would never go for it.
Where do you think Ben Johnson then ends up?
It's hard to say because he's a very unique individual with just how selective he's been. He could have been a head coach for the last two cycles, and he's been like, thanks, but no thanks. He had the Commanders flying out mid-flight, and he calls him like, actually, no, I don't even want to do this, dude.
Right.
So go back home kind of deal. So I don't know. It seems like the Bears are the team.
But do the Bears pay him? You know, are they
a little penny pinching with that stuff?
A little family run business, yeah.
Well, sure. I'll tell you what, the Mike Vrabel, I mean, his stock just continues to climb and climb and climb. And it's like so many reports are he's like the top candidate for all these teams.
Because they're realizing that they probably can't get Ben Johnson.
Maybe that's what it is.
I bet you the word's starting to filter through the NFL, the rank and file, that Ben Johnson is going to cost you a ton of money, and maybe Mike Vrabel isn't going to cost you a ton of money. So I think that's something you have to kind of...
Money factor, experience factor,
yeah.
Culture builder, tough guy, Vrabel. I don't know. People are... The reports are like, man, I don't know if his agent is just back-channeling and doing a great job getting stuff out there. But Vrabel, Ben Johnson, I think everybody would want Ben Johnson. But like you said, does Ben Johnson want them?
Okay, Chicago. Give me a thumbs up or thumbs
down. Yeah, I'd go thumbs up on that.
Okay, Jacksonville.
I don't think he would want anything to do with that.
Okay, Jacksonville, what if Jacksonville says, we will fire our general manager and you could bring in your own personnel guy that you like?
Now, from my perspective, I'd be looking at Trevor Lawrence like, is that an asset now? I don't think so.
Okay,
I'd still probably rather gamble on the early career here of Caleb Williams, even though his rookie season's been bad. I would say no.
Vegas Raiders.
The Raiders. That was the worst win of the weekend. They go from picking number 2 to number 6 or 7 now, playing themselves, painting themselves into a corner where they're going to have to trade up a bunch of assets to go get a quarterback. If they were picking number 2 overall, then I would say yes, because now I'm getting Cam Ward or maybe Shedeur Sanders, and you're building from there.
So you're saying no?
But I will say no with the way things have played out. New Orleans. I think New Orleans would want him.
Yeah.
I don't think he would want New Orleans.
Okay.
I think Aaron Glenn's going to New Orleans, the defensive coordinator for the Lions.
Sounds like it. Yeah. Okay. Giants.
Yeah, the Giants for sure. Okay. Number 1 overall pick.
So you think that Ben Johnson's choices are going to come down to Chicago or the Giants?
I do. And then the Raiders potentially, but I would say no. After winning that game yesterday, I would hate to be a Raiders fan.
Okay.
You need a quarterback so bad, and now all of a sudden you're going to have to trade a bunch of picks if you want to go get a guy. That's frustrating. They were literally in their just lose baby era, and they find a way to win. I mean, that's what happens when you're playing Jacksonville, I guess. Yeah. But, I mean, my gosh, dude, you go from picking number 1 or 2 to now number 6 or 7. I would hate to be a Raiders fan. All right, good day to be a Rangers fan, though. Jared Sandler joins us next right here on the...
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan. All right, Rangers are making some moves. We got Jared Sandler set to join us here momentarily. It's the G-Bag Nation on a Cowboys victory Monday. We'll get you to Krusty's Corner here in just a few minutes. Segment's brought to you by Ciroc Vodka and Frankel & Frankel. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call Frankel first, 214-333-3333. With Frankel & Frankel, there's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankel & Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. And segment's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. And now to the D&M Leasing Hotline we go to welcome in our Rangers insider, Jared Sandler. Ladies and gentlemen, Jared, happy holidays to you, man. We were pretty surprised the Christmas and Hanukkah collision course on Christmas Day. This feels like this is kind of historical.
It is. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, this is the first time that this has happened in my lifetime. I was told that this morning that Christmas and Hanukkah, Christmas is obviously always on the 25th, but Hanukkah starting on the 25th is a first in a long time. There has been an overlap before because, apparently years ago, some candles stayed lit for 8 days or whatever. So Hanukkah is 8 days, if you believe that. And it has overlapped, but the starting point on the 25th, I think that's a first for at least several years.
Yeah, that's what we were trying to figure out earlier. Somebody was texting in every 15 to 20 years or so, but if it's the first in your lifetime, it's even rarefied than that.
Listen, the Elias Sports Bureau's religious wing is a little off. It's a little primitive. They're still developing. They don't have quite the talent as they do in the various sports, so it is possible that that branch has made an error. I imagine, do you guys ever wonder, has the Elias Sports Bureau ever messed up? Like, have they ever just gotten it wrong? I'm sure they have, right?
Yeah, they have.
No, Elias is dialed.
I'm sure they have.
Dude, Elias is batting 1,000.
Is he or she or them?
Them.
That's a good point.
Them.
I think they have.
I think John Blake, Rangers Hall of Famer, told us the story this past year. I mean, there was like an Elias, and I don't remember if it was a husband and wife or two brothers, or maybe I'm just making up that there was more than one person. But the Elias Sports Bureau was started by a Mr. or Mrs. I don't know, an Elias.
Look at that. Yeah. Let me see here.
All the nuggets today.
It was in 1913. Yeah. It was Al Munro Elias and his brother Walter Elias.
There you go. Yeah.
They established it. Thank you, Jared.
They were counting on abacuses back then, and that's how they kept track.
All right, well, let's keep track of what these Rangers are doing because they're making moves all over the place. They just brought in another reliever. We'll get to that. But what'd you make of the Nathaniel Lowe trade, getting back another reliever in Robert Garcia?
Yeah, it seemed like going into the offseason, it seemed like trading Nathaniel Lowe was a possibility. He is, and unfortunately, baseball CBA is such that the contract status for players is maybe not as straightforward as it is for other leagues. So, super baseball fans understand the arbitration process, but the average baseball fan might not. So Nathaniel Lowe was under team control for a couple more years, but through arbitration, and that means essentially that the team, can non-tender him, which means they cut him loose, or there's a process by which they determine a salary if they want to keep him, and that number was probably going to be upwards of $10 million and perhaps a little more than what the Rangers want to pay for Nathaniel Lowe with what his skill set is relative to what the team's needs are. And I think it's important to make that delineation. Nathaniel Lowe's a really good player. I mean, he's in the last few years, in addition to winning a World Series individually, has won a Gold Glove and has won a Silver Slugger Award. He is not your typical first baseman, or at least he doesn't fit the typical prototype of, big power guy. He's actually kind of the antithesis of that. He's more of a patient, I'm going to get on base and make my money by drawing walks and hitting singles the other way. And his power has kind of waned a little bit over the last couple of years. With that said, his overall offensive production was still really strong. But this is a team that struggled against fastballs last year. They also struggled against right-handed pitching. And Nathaniel Lowe wasn't necessarily a fastball beast. Now, he was fine against righties, but I think the Rangers saw an opportunity to add more power against righties. And so anyway, I think with Nathaniel Lowe, there was an opportunity because he is a good player, right? We always want to trade four guys and we want to give up nothing. Well, you got to give to get. And so, the Rangers were able to trade Nathaniel Lowe and have the Nationals take on, all of his presumptive salary post-arbitration. In so doing, they get Robert Garcia, who I think is going to be, a decent part at minimum of the bullpen. We can talk more about him in a second. But it's also opened up some money for the Rangers to go and make other moves. And while it has not been officially announced yet, reports earlier this morning surfacing that the Rangers have signed Jock Peterson, who helps address some major needs in their lineup.
Okay, so let's go to Jock Peterson.
Celebrates Hanukkah.
Yeah,
in case you're wondering.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Big-time high school player.
I was wondering why Walchuk was so fired up
huge.
About this
man. He was a big-time recruit for USC. We thought we had him. He committed to USC.
Yeah.
He got drafted in the 11th round, typically. You might not sign out of high school if you're drafted in the 11th round, but the Dodgers paid him a whole lot of money relative to what an 11th rounder makes, and it's obviously worked out nicely for him.
Well, what are the Rangers getting in Jock Peterson at this stage?
Yeah, this stage of his career, they're getting a guy who, he can play every once in a while in the field, but, he's probably best used as a DH, and he is one of the best right-handed pitching mashers in baseball. He's a left-handed hitter, and one of the things he does that I think will get overlooked that Nathaniel Lowe did such a good job of is see pitches, draw walks, work the count. The Rangers have a very aggressive lineup. Seager, Simeon, Young, Jake Berger, who's now a part of it, Adolis Garcia, if he's going to be a part of it. These are all very aggressive hitters, and you need some guys who are a little more patient to balance it out. Evan Carter can be a part of that balance. Jock Peterson will be a part of that balance. On top of that, I mentioned that the Rangers struggled against fastballs and they struggled against righties. Well, there are very few free agents out there. Obviously, Juan Soto is on this list, but very few free agents out there other than Juan Soto who really address that to the degree that Joc Pederson is able to address that. He is, I mean, when I say he is one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball against right-handed pitching, you might think, well, Jared, that's silly. I mean, you know, what about all these other guys? I mean, we don't hear about Joc Pederson like we hear about, you know, some of the other names. That's because he is a platoon player, and a lot of the other names are everyday players. That's the long side of the platoon, right? You're going to face more righties than you are lefties. Joc Pederson, there were 11 players in baseball last year who ranked in the top 15 against right-handed pitching and slugging on base and OPS. 10 all-stars last year, and then Joc Pederson. I mean, he is that good of a hitter against righties, and it's not just last year. If you look at his last 3 years, it's when he's really started to tick up. He, you know, hits for average against righties, gets on base, hits for power. You ask, well, it seems too good to be true. Well, you know, we talked about this a lot towards the end of last season. You are not going to pay nearly as much for a platoon player dollar for dollar than you will for an everyday player. And so, you know, that is, if you want to call it a wart, that's the thing some teams maybe don't want to pay. You know, almost the reported deal is 2 years and just under $40 million. They might not want to or have the means to pay that much for a platoon player. The Rangers obviously do, and he absolutely fits the needs that they have. And I expect him to be right in the middle of that order anytime the Rangers face a right-handed starter.
Hey, Jared, we talked about you mentioned like Milner, the pitcher, mm-hmm. and then also I want to bring up Garcia. And my scout buddies in baseball were telling me these dudes have like funky kind of deliveries to them, like, you know, like sidearm kind of deliveries. And is there something to that? Are the Rangers trying something different? Is there a philosophy if, like, hey, now all of a sudden you got two dudes that are kind of got those weird funky deliveries?
Yeah, so there are a couple of schools of thought here, and you know this, Brad. It's when you're building a team, every, you know, in any sport, their philosophies, and there's not one right philosophy, but when a team has success, you know, monkey see, monkey want, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a team like the Mariners. The Mariners really kind of leaned into the idea that, you know, they were looking for a very certain type of pitcher with a certain release point and a certain set of stuff, thinking that, hey, you know, at the end of the day, this is what is going to optimize a pitcher's chances for success. So why not seek out those types of pitchers? And that's the low three quarters release point with a you know, heavy rise fastball. And those guys have been really successful. There are other teams out there who believe that the more different arm angles, the more different looks you can show hitters over the course of a game, a series, and if it's within a division, multiple series over the course of the year, the better off you are. You know, there's a reason why relievers, all pitchers, the more you see them, the more you're going to succeed against them, in theory, right? But not necessarily the case individual, you know, by individual, but that's why first time through, second time through, third time through, fourth time through, the data shows that the more experience or exposure you get to a pitcher, the better off you're going to be as a hitter. Well, it's no different, you know, even though not every pitcher is built the same, if you get a lot of the same looks, one school of thought is it could increase your chances or opportunities for success. And so give people different looks. And even, you know, Milner and Garcia, even if it, you know, maybe a similar funkiness, different collection of things, right? Milner is a big ground ball guy. He's the guy you guys remember, you know, Sam Dyson, yes. The Rangers, when they needed a ground ball, Sam Dyson was the guy, right? Mm-hmm. Now, again, different stuff than Sam Dyson, but Milner's a guy. You need a ground ball, Hobie Milner can help get you that. Robert Garcia is more of a changeup guy. You know, that's why he succeeds as a lefty against right-handed hitters, and then left on left, he goes fastball slider. So, you know, right there, you got two lefties, but they bring different things to the table, and there is some thought that, you know, mixing that up really helps a team when you look at the pitching staff, or just the bullpen, or however you want to break it down as a whole, as opposed to building it individually.
Jared Sandler with us here on The Fan. Rangers signed right-handed pitcher Sean Armstrong as well in the last hour. What do you know about him?
Yeah, you know, one-year deal, guy who maybe it's always tough to know with a reliever's numbers because you know, Robert Garcia's ERA doesn't really demonstrate the type of success he had last year. Sean Armstrong, you know, spent last season split with two clubs, but he's a guy who, you know, has spent time in the Tampa Bay system, and like they do with a lot of pitchers, they, you know, find a way to optimize success. And I think the Rangers, you know, deserve credit. We talked about this for a few years now. They've done a much better job of taking, you know, veterans, bringing them in and either, you know, helping them continue to do what they do or allowing them to take a step in the right direction. They did it even last year, you know, with David Robertson and Kirby Yates, with, you know, how good those guys had been in the past, but the steps forward that they took while with the Rangers. And I think Sean Armstrong's just another guy with major league experience. He's a veteran and someone, you know, Chris Young, I think, said it best. And he didn't say what I'm about to say to lead. You know, Chris Young didn't say, well, this guy is going to just make our bullpen the best bullpen in the league or anything. But what he did say was it's going to raise the floor of our bullpen. And I think that's important. I think the depth and the reliable depth that they're starting to build is important. And what's next now is to try and help that ceiling and help, you know, help make sure they're going to be able to get outs 22 through 27. You know, over the course of a game. And I think those moves are what's going to come, you know, I don't know, next few days, next few weeks. But that's still, I think, on the shopping list for the Rangers.
Awesome, Jared. Thanks so much for the time, man. And happy holidays to you. Happy Hanukkah.
Hey, yeah, you guys as well. Take care.
Yes, sir. There he goes. Jared Sandler, as the Rangers continue to make some moves. We see Chris Young was talking to the media, says that the Rangers did meet with Roki Sasaki and the agent last week in person. So holding out a little bit of hope for that. Hopefully Kirby Yates returns as well. Got to have that beast closer. But the Rangers not going status quo here.
No.
They're shaking some things up. Jock Peterson, very, very exciting stuff. Okay, let's go ahead and tee up a Victory Monday edition of Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Heating and Air.
Yeah, we're going to do a little bit. Let's talk about the Cowboys defense to start this one out, and then we'll catch the offense. We'll do that next.
It's Cowboys Victory Monday. We'll get you the Mike McCarthy presser as soon as he goes live here from the Star in just a few minutes. But right now, as we always do at this time, let's get a little Krusty's Corner action brought to you by Reliant Heating and Air. King of the Krusty's, Brian Broaddus, take it away.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that. I'm still trying to figure out who eats more in the press box, you or Blake. Or Fred. I think Fred's now into the mix.
I'm pretty impressed with the way Fred gets down. You know, I see him constantly making a run back to the table.
Yeah.
There's always something else to be had.
Right.
I got him just watchdogging him. I got him averaging like 3.5 plates a game.
I think that to me, I look over, I see Blake eats quite a bit too.
Well, Blake's the mac and cheese guy. Blake will just, he'll have a full course meal, and then you'll see him just go back two or three times for just a full plate of the legendary Legends Hospitality mac and cheese. Okay, actually, it's time to go live to Mike McCarthy at the Star.
You talked before about how you felt the end of your first season here provided a bit of a springboard going into that next season and establishing your culture and getting everyone on board. Do you see some similarities with, I know you've said that's a message you have to get across every year. Are you starting to see some similarities this year with how this team is finishing the season? Understanding the two games.
Comparing to year one?
Well, just as far as the message taking root with younger players and that sort of thing.
Definitely. I mean, you never really, you know, fully, you know where you are until you go through, you know, the highs and lows of a season with any of your teams. And obviously the first-year players are the ones that, you know, that have the biggest adjustment. But, yeah, it's hard to compare anything to the first year just because everything that was went on with the pandemic and, you know, we just had things that, you know, thankfully we have hopefully never have to deal with again. So, but yeah, I think clearly culture and, you know, it's something that's, it's never the same, you know, it's moving one direction or the other. So, and that's just why you just keep investing in it. And as new people come into your space, you know, there's an education, in a re-education process that you're always going through, and I think it clearly helps you when you go through the adversity of a season.
And I know in this stretch you've lost so many players, and we've talked to you about the guys who have stepped up, but some of your your star players, how they persevered through this, such as like CD and Micah. What have you seen from them in this stretch?
Well, I mean, CD's just, you know, battles every.
Jay Giles.
Name that tune. That's nice. I would have expected Christmas music, but we'll move forward. No, CD's been incredible, just week in and week out, you know, to battle through and still, you know, carry the role and the responsibility that he has for our offense. You know, Mike obviously missed some time, but, you know, since he's been back, you know, just the impact and really that, you know, the opportunities he creates for others too, you know. It'd be nice to see some holding calls, but, you know, other than that, he's not being critical, just an observation. He's definitely made a huge impact since he's come back from the ankle injury.
Clarence Hill, All City DLLS. You talked about Michael coming back, but the defense has steadily improved and you continue to have guys out. I know it's next man up is what you talk about, but still you're missing guys. And what's been the key to the dramatic improvement on defense?
Oh, I just think it's a combination of things. I think clearly the connection, the understanding is so much higher than we were early in the season. And I think just like anything on offense or defense, you know, it starts in the run game. We've been able to, you know, the run defense has really improved where Mike's been able to, you know, get to the pressure packages. I just think our guys are playing with so much more energy. Is that just me or? Okay. Yeah. It's not the sun. Let's not start that. We're well past that.
They're playing with more energy because they're more comfortable.
Confidence. Yeah, I mean, confidence is the fuel that makes all this thing. I mean, when you win, that's, you know, you don't win games not being confident. So yeah, I mean, just the confidence and, you know, the everyday and the understanding. And like I said, this team has done a really good job of staying after it. You know, during the preparation. Parts of it, and the improvements come, you know, weekly, and defense is a good example of that.
Mike, Todd Archer with ESPN. Beyond his on-field stuff, what does Jordan Lewis mean to this team?
Stud. Just a stud of a man, stud of a, you know, his personality. I just love his combativeness, his toughness, and he's the same every day. I mean, he just wears it on his sleeve, and that's, you know, you could arguably say it's the biggest play that we've had this year. That was just such an incredible interception, particularly at that time in the game. But that's Jordan Lewis every day, and that's what he means to our football team.
And then with Leafau and the green dot, have you given it to a rookie much before? Do you remember?
How do you do with the handle and all that stuff?
No, he's doing a really good job. I think just the way, you know, Mike has brought him along. You know, just first getting comfortable, you know, in the sub, you know, then the base, and so I think the process of you know, him not have to do it, you know, right out the gate was obviously very important. But I think he's done a really good job.
John Machado with The Athletic. I think for some it would be easy to say, hey, you're eliminated from the playoffs. What is there to still play hard for? And obviously the team did that yesterday. Is that something that you should just expect from professional athletes, or do you think that there's something particularly about this team of why they wouldn't give in on something like that?
No, I think it's definitely, you know, specific to our football team. I think it's important to play the right way each and every week, and it's hard. I mean, it's hard to win a game in this league, regardless of the circumstances of, you know, where you are in the playoff picture. Your pride is on display, you know, each and every time you step out onto that field, and pride matters. And I thought our men reflected that last night.
Calvin Watkins, Dallas Mountaineers. You've coached against Zim. Now you've been with him this year. Considering what he hasn't had, is this one of his better coaching jobs in terms of just getting guys going every week?
Yeah, definitely. I think just like anything, you're always looking for progress. You know, it's unfortunate that we didn't, you know, squeeze out of a couple of those games early, because we definitely had some opportunities. But the one thing I've always looked for, and it's part of the training regiment, as far as how you schedule, how you train, how you try to build a, you know, rest recovery. You try to do everything you can to get the team to play its best football at the end of the year. So, and we're doing that right now. You know, I think we've played really good football here the last month. And we need to finish it. We need to finish it these next 2 weeks. We've got two division games, and because this will help everybody, players, coaches, you know, pay it forward, because that's what you have to do to win it all in this league. You got to play your best football coming out, you know, it's in December going into January. So, that's definitely an experience we can draw from.
I'm impressed with you that Mike was able to get those two young linebackers, Nick and Maris, to play almost the majority of the game last night.
Yeah, definitely. Nick's, just what he's done, just the whole year. He's done a nice job on special teams, just with the practice regimen. But, Marist is, he's a special young man. You can see that, just the energy that he brings, and, his understanding and comfort's only going to improve and get higher as the more he plays. So he definitely has impact ability, and gives you a nice dimension, from the inside linebacker position, because, he's obviously can get out and play on the edge, and, he's done that in college, and he's, has that capability of doing it here for us also.
Josh.
Mike, Josh Valentino, Lone Star Live. In the fourth quarter yesterday, how do you kind of balance clock management, time of possession, when, you're within Brandon's range, but, you opt to punt and play defense there, up two scores?
Within his range?
Yeah.
What is his range? We're still trying to figure that out. So, I think, just like anything, there's more factors than going for the long, the long field goal. Also, you got to play the other side of it. But I think clearly the decision, and it ended up being the right decision, just the confidence that I had in the way our defense was playing.
And then just on Brandon, what have you noticed just about, like, his consistency all throughout the season, but especially on a night where he knocks, three from 50-plus?
I think Brandon's numbers, really speak for themselves. I can't tell you how consistent he's been since he's been here. And just the way that, the football comes off his foot so consistent. And, obviously we have a ton of confidence in him. And, he made all the kicks and the opportunities. And, he makes a 58-yarder look pretty easy.
Ed.
Mike Edwarder, WFAA. Because it's so unusual for someone of your stature to work the final year of a contract, and out of sensitivity, it's not asked of you often, but Jerry offers his opinion when he's asked about it all the time. As you get toward the end of the season, how eager are you to have some kind of resolution personally?
Eager? I do believe in time and place, and this is not the time or the place for me to speak on it. Really, my focus is more about the staff. They're concerned. Is higher for me, because the change is something that happens in our league, all the time, and it's part of the, it's part of this industry, and I understand that, but I am at a different point in my life, but I'm more focused on them, and I know that the best way to help everybody is to take care of what's in front of us, and that's why the commitment, the pride, and in the road that we now have to go because of what happened yesterday. So I think it benefits everybody for me just to stay on course.
Joe.
Joe Hoyt, also Dallas. You talked about Nick Vigil earlier. He's a guy that's, been limited in practice a lot, or didn't practice a lot, and was able to obviously play a lot yesterday. Just what does he have to do to be able to play, and then how just reliable has he been to have a guy like that behind Eric that you can?
Yeah, it's unique, without a doubt. I've gone through it with veteran players. In the past, you've seen it. I can remember the first player I watched go through it, offensive tackle by the name of Glenn Parker. Just what he went through each week to play back in the 90s. So it's remarkable what these men do on a weekly basis. If you'd have been in the training room this morning, you that was a physical football game last night. So, and it was definitely reflected, just the way our guys were going through the treatments and so forth. So. But yeah, it's what Nick does is unique, and I think it's also a credit to the medical and training staff and Mike Zimmer, and just, you know, we know what we need to do to get him ready, and, you know, and also put John Fossil in that conversation also, because, you know, Nick's been an outstanding contributor for us on special teams.
Earlier this season, we talked about turnovers and kind of the lack of generating compared to the year before. Obviously, that's changed. Last night, you guys had two literal takeaways. How much did you talk about confidence earlier with the defense? How much does that confidence maybe also play into turnovers and kind of forcing
it? It's a big part of it, man. And I'm a huge believer. You get what you emphasize. You know, we've really cranked it up because it wasn't where it needed to be early in the year. We taking care of the football is, you know, part of that conversation, and that's, you know, that's critical to winning. Stats really speak for themselves. But I thought our guys flew around and, you know, were clawing at the ball. Not only the ones that we got, that, you know, that we did get, but also I thought our takeaway opportunities were where they needed to be. Because, you know, you got to get yourself in position first, and the more shots you have at the plate, the more you're going to get. So we're definitely doing a much better job in that area right now.
Saad Youssef, The Athletic. Mike, when you were a young assistant and growing through the ranks until you got to Green Bay, what were some culture aspects of the programs that you worked in that stood out to you that you looked at and said that this is what you want to implement when you do become a head coach?
Just a lot of the basics. Every organization is different. You know, the personality of the head coach is different. I was fortunate, and something I think really helped shape me was I always worked for defensive head coaches. So, you know, their approach, their mindset towards, their view of how the game should be played, I think it really helps you in, you know, game management, looking at things from the other side of the fence. So I would say that, but, you know, but the reality of it is the consistency, you know, accountability, the work ethic, you know, just all the key instrumental points that you have to have in a healthy culture.
And just because you mentioned him so often, Marty Schottenheimer, what stood out to you about his program's culture and what he did?
Everybody knew exactly where they stood. There was never any gray area. Conflict was welcomed. You know, conflict was good. Confrontation and just, you know, getting to the bottom of things. Don't, you know, and probably the most important thing was the demand and details. You know, that's something that Marty was big into. And he respected everybody, and his appreciation, particularly, you know, him being a former player, just the love that he had for his players. You know, he definitely wore it on his sleeve.
Babe Lockberg, 105.3 The Fan. Understanding it wasn't a playoff game, it wasn't a game that got you to the playoffs, but given, you know, Tampa Bay, four straight wins, Sunday Night Football, was that as gratifying, maybe a win for you, as it's been in a while?
Yeah, definitely. It's the most gratifying win that, you know, we probably had all year, you know, because of, you know, that was a punch in the, you know, that was a punch in the gut, you know, with, you know, the Philadelphia, you know, Washington game. So, but, you know, I just thought our guys just stayed the course and went out and played. I mean, it's exciting to play at AT&T Stadium. It's exciting to play on Sunday Night Football. So, you know, and at the end of the day, that you know, that football team was, you know, like I said, you know, I thought it was on film in the preparation phase going into the game. I think it was clearly one of the better teams we played this year. I was very, very impressed with the way they've been playing. So it's an offense that's very balanced. They do a good job getting the ball distributed to their playmakers. You know, defense is a challenge. You know, that front seven is everything we thought it would be, and schematically they're a challenge. So, we were ready to go play a hell of a football game, and I think it's clearly what happened last night. We got it done in the end.
Claire.
There was so much talk earlier about when people were thinking you were out and whether you should play Trey Lance, you know, and you were planning to win and planning to steal with the playoff berth. Now that it's over, is it all about winning? Do you think about guys for next year? We need to find out what this guy is out of his contract. What's the mindset here?
The mindset's to win. You know, we're going to Philadelphia to win the game. You know, we're viewing it as it's a division game. It's a rival game, all those things. You know, it's going to be exciting to go up there. You know, the crowd's going to welcome us with open arms like they always do. So we're fired up about that too. We're going there to win. And, you know, that's something I think is clear to everybody. You know, we got to, you know, it's Christmas week. So, you know, the work week's going to be a little different this week. But, we'll get all the work in just like we would on any other week. But, yes, we're playing this game to win.
From an organizational standpoint, for a guy like that, there's an investment in him. You gave him a fourth round pick. Do you need to find out what he is before he hits free agency? Is that something that Is anybody's mindset?
Well, the evaluation process goes on all the time. It would benefit. I think it's a very fair question. Playing in games, but we feel really good about what we do every day. How we train and all the things that go into it. So, right now is we're game planning. I'm going right to third down as soon as I get done from here, and so like I said, we're going to line up and try to build off the win we had last night.
Mike, you mentioned their front seven. What would you put the run game issues on? It seemed like it was either between the tackles or wide. It was hard to get much going.
Coaching, just put it on the coach. You guys have been too nice to me today. So, they're tough. That's the way they play. I mean, if you look at the run, the run defensive calls that they have, the five man lines, the six man lines. So it's definitely, something that, we just got to continue to work on. We're going to get some of it this week in Philadelphia. It's really the way the league's gone, frankly, first and second down, just that defenses are doing so much more as far as front variation. And, they got some dynamic pieces too. I thought that, their D-line played well. And so it definitely wasn't the performance we were looking for. And, we need to, which we have been today, just how we, what can we apply moving forward to Philadelphia? Because, we got another excellent front that we're getting ready to play.
All righty. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, there it is, the Mike McCarthy presser live from the Star on a Cowboys victory Monday. We'll have some takeaways, and we'll get you Krusty's Corner coming up next right here on The Fan.